Hi, I'm Morgan.
I'm Odette.
And I'm Madeline.
And we love Christian fiction.
We love it so much that we wanted to talk about it on a podcast.
Each episode, we will read classics of the genre or new releases.
And discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly. So come join us.
Hello, hello!
Welcome. Hi, everyone! I was trying to not talk about Morgan. He's talking at the same time.
Oh, that's hilarious. But we're in the same room together, which is so fun.
It's so fun.
It's been a while, so it's even more special.
That's true.
Yeah. We're hanging out, talking about books. What's better than that?
Nothing.
Literally nothing.
Maybe baby cuddles.
just kidding.
Anyway, listeners, I have 3 children. I'm about to have 2 more. I love baby cuddles, but
talking about books is hits
my
right.
Preference is cuddling a baby
while talking about books. Mm. There it is.
Honestly,
that's all I ever want in life.
Cup of wine in your hand, done deal.
People frown on that when you're cuddling babies. I just want to tell you from past experience.
Drinking a wine while holding a baby?
Yeah.
Well, you're at a bar, at your house.
I get weird looks anytime. Not in my house. I invite selective people over. My husband just stands there and gives you a look. So
I feel like I've never judged. I've just been like, that's an interesting choice. If like you're at a straight up bar, like not like a restaurant bar.
I don't think I've ever been to a straight up bar in my life.
I've never seen a person holding a baby at a bar.
Like an infant child? Yeah, no, that's weird.
That would be weird.
I've literally been to
restaurants. You've been one of the judges.
I have not said anything to them, but I thought to myself, this is an interesting
choice.
It's 11 p.m.
Nobody's ever said anything to me.
She said, this is an interesting choice. It's 11 p.m.
How old was the baby? Like an infant? They don't have bedtimes. Infants don't have bedtimes. They're just
like
all the time. Or
probably 6 to 8 months old.
That's weird.
My 6 to 8 month olds have bedtimes for sure.
Well, and here's the thing, I'm not judging, I get it, but like, and here's the thing, restaurant, but like, it was like a bar, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, not
like
a
it wasn't like there's
bar.
A family, yeah,
yeah,
oh. Yeah.
Yeah, just yeah, a bar. I literally don't think I've ever even been to a bar.
Well, after you have these twins, I feel like we need to go to a bar.
But let's don't bring your children with you,
yeah,
because that is weird. Why would I? That's what we're saying. That's weird. It's a weird thing to do.
I mean, listen, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, but like it felt like it was an intentional choice. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like not like, oh, we were on a road trip, this is the only restaurant in town. It was like there was tons of places around. And again, it was 11 p.m.
That is kinda late.
I don't go anywhere at 11 p.m. If you catch me out at 11 p.m., it's like something's wrong with Morgan.
Or it's New Year's.
No. I'm not out at 11 p.m.
At 11 p.m. this year because you were at my house.
Yeah.
That's true. You were.
But that's not out. That's at someone's house. And I was in sweats. And I had a ride home.
That's true.
And she fell asleep on the way home.
And I did fall asleep on the way home. That's true. And at 11 p.m., I was sitting on your couch having so much fun, but thinking, man, why did I make this choice? I could be home in bed right now.
Here's the thing.
It's just
no judgment.
I just want to be home in bed if it's past.
I felt that way when, like, because we were up in the air about whether or not the party was going to happen that day. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, listen, if it doesn't happen, I'm only going to text my one friend who's my neighbor and be like, come over, hang. We'll watch a movie.
Absolutely.
Literally,
yes.
Both probably go our separate ways at 10 p.m. and call it night.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Absolutely.
Roll over, text somebody.
I know.
Yeah, I love it. No, anywho. So,
okay, listeners, welcome to the podcast.
You apparently got a lot of our thoughts, and we love babies and books, and we're here to talk about both, probably, honestly, knowing us.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
And this is a special episode because this is a new kind of episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're calling them the bookshelf episodes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we basically decided that we weren't talking about enough books, and there were too many books
to read
we wanted to read.
Yes.
And we also wanted to talk about and not enough weeks in the year
mm-hmm.
to release
right.
podcast episodes about them.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with this idea to release these bookshelf mm-hmm. episodes where we each get to talk about
multiple
mm-hmm. books that we've been reading, what's sitting on our bookshelf, what have we read, what are we excited to mm-hmm. read. Discuss them together and with you.
Also, it's fun to like talk about books in like I love our deep dive episodes, mm-hmm. but there is a level of like, preparation. that goes into that.
Absolutely.
So it's sometimes fun, at least for me. Like, I binge read probably 4 books this week because I was like, oh, I could talk about them on the bookshelf episode because I can briefly talk about them and I don't really have to prepare anything. I can just off the cuff talk about them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of nice too.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like binge read a bunch and then be like, let me tell you about what I've been reading. It's great.
And I think it ties back to our, we just want to read books and be happy theme.
Absolutely.
Which honestly, I might start putting in votes for this to be season 4 themes because I have loved it
and
so
every
much.
Season theme? Just in like, every season theme. Like, read books like, and be happy.
Like our sub.
Yeah, Redeeming Lit podcast.
Redeeming Lit. A Christian fiction podcast.
Read books and be happy. Yeah.
Why would we not make that part of
the get that tattooed on my body. Not the Redeeming Lit podcast part. No offense.
You would get
love you. Love you guys.
She said immediately, no offense.
But like, read books and be happy. That's like my life motto.
Yeah, so. There you go. Put it on a tote bag. Or a tattoo.
I was like, yeah, or one step further. I just said I'd tattoo it down on my forehead or anything, but well, sure, somewhere, probably.
Yeah. I mean, because you could do a really cool tattoo with read books and be happy because it could be like a cool font and then have like a little stack of books.
Absolutely, yes.
Mm. Anyways, so we were...
Wow.
Welcome, listeners. Aren't you so glad that you tuned in? I think a couple of housekeeping is we're together, so you're going to hear probably a lot more snacking and beverages and things, I think, but, you know, drinking, being merry, being happy, whatever.
Yeah.
Snacking, no apologies.
We never apologize.
We never apologize for laughing snacks.
That's true.
And also, we're doing this episode, this type of episode for the first time, so we haven't really, like...
Yeah.
We kind of know what the format is, but we're kind of going with the
format. We're loosey-goosey on this one.
It'll be fun.
Our goal is to do one of these a quarter.
Yes.
So we would love to have, like, a spring bookshelf episode, a summer, fall, and winter, just so that there's... And then, because books are coming out all the time. So this
books
is like a
coming out.
This is like a sampling of... So some of these books that we've read are new releases that have come out really recently or not in the too distant past. And so that's another one of the ideas too, is to just be like, there's so many books coming out and there's so much to talk about. So we would, hopefully we'll have 4 of these a season.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be exciting because we could even do a Christmas one.
Oh yeah. An all Christmas bookshelf episode.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Christmas/winter/holiday.
Christmas/winter.
Like, you know.
But probably they'll all be Christmas books.
Probably.
Yeah, all mine probably will be.
Well, I mean, Warden's for sure
will.
I only read Christmas books all through November and December.
Here's a real question. Could a book, I'm just asking,
yes,
talk about the winter season if, like, the book was over an extended period of time, and you're assuming it's not, like, a 2-week timeline, you know?
Okay, sure.
If it was set in the winter, the chances of Christmas being mentioned are fairly high.
Right.
That's true.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So I feel like if you do winter, you're encompassing Christmas. Although, technically, winter starts...
Not necessarily, really.
Well, because winter starts 4 days before Christmas.
Right. But, like, I mean, but usually, like, if something is classified as a Christmas book, it's, like, heavy Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Typically.
Yeah.
Right?
True story. I mean, it's one could also say it's, like, the arguments of, like, is this movie a Christmas movie? Insert.
Oh, absolutely.
And people have strong opinions.
People have very strong opinions about that.
Can I tell you one of the things that I find the funniest comment? And I don't know why I find this funny, but every time that I've been in a situation and someone has said this, I'm like, oh, you don't even know what you've started. When somebody says, like, I've had this in client meetings where you're, like, talking about something and they're like, I mean, we'd love to hear your opinion. Do you have opinions? Oh, do I have opinions?
Do I have
opinions? What sort of a question is that? I literally, like, I think one of I feel like we all of us humans, but especially
everybody's
all of us ladies. Yeah, absolutely. True. But I also think that we all have a lot of skill sets. I feel like one of mine is I can form an opinion on almost anything rather quickly, even if I know nothing about the topic, when someone asks me about it.
Oh, man. There you go. That is a skill because I can't do that.
Yeah.
I literally can't do that. I have to know, like, a lot of information and have been sitting with it for a long time before I can form an opinion.
I don't form opinions fast. Well, no, I do form opinions fast, but, like, I'm either, like, I have the most strong opinion about it in the world, or it means literally nothing to me.
So, like,
there's no in between.
Yeah.
Just
no
like,
opinion. Yeah.
I don't care about that. Most popular thing in the world.
Yeah.
I have no opinions on it. What do you mean you don't have any opinions on it? I don't have any opinions on it. And it's really hard to sway my, it's like, I'm just like, I don't have an opinion on it because I don't care about
either
it.
Either way. That's so interesting.
Opposites of the spectrum.
Because
that's usually what it is for me.
If also I feel like I don't know a lot about the subject and someone has a stronger opinion or feels differently, I could be swayed. Like, it's not like I'm like,
sure,
I'm going to be, it's just more like, oh, you want me to have thoughts on that? Sure thing.
I'll give you a thought. Like, absolutely.
You give me a topic. I'll give you a thought. Like,
love it. I love that.
Anyways.
That's awesome. helpful. That's useful. That's a skill.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can think so. So who wants to go first?
Who wants to go first? I will go first.
Yes.
Okay. So, the first book that I have up is by an author we interviewed last season and talked to, Laura Conaway.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote a book. This was actually, this came out in December, but we're just talking about it now. So this isn't a spring.
Well, that was in the not too distant past, as you clarified.
And it is a love inspired suspense, which means it's a category romance. So I love it. It was very exciting. It's very exciting. I was very excited about it. This is Silencing the Witness. Again, the author is Laura Conaway. This is her first book with Harlequin. And I was listening to an interview with her about this, and she definitely has more slated.
That's exciting.
More category romance slated. She has several other books on the lineup, but specifically more category slated, which is really exciting because I loved this one.
Oh, yeah?
It was so good. Here, I'll read the back cover copy, and then I'll tell you a little bit about it. Okay. A protected witness is exposed. The race is on to keep her alive. When her photo is leaked in the local paper, Avery Sanford's identity and witness protection is compromised. She's the key witness to a murder, and a ruthless drug ring will stop at nothing to silence her. With attackers on her tail, Avery has no choice but to accept the help of former Army Commander Seth Brown. But keeping Avery alive long enough to testify could be the end for them both.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Right?
Sign me up.
Sign me up.
So, this was really fun. I was, again, listening to this same interview. I think it was on the Because Fiction podcast with Shatona Habig, which I listen to a lot. She interviews a lot of the same authors that we interview.
Oh, that's so fun.
So, it's sometimes fun to hear, like, what questions she asks them versus what questions she asks them.
We should do a combined episode sometime.
We should. Shatona. You probably are way too busy to listen to this. But if you do listen to it, you'll probably be hearing from us. She's an author and a podcaster, yes. And she does a lot of things. She's a very busy lady. Anyways, so she was saying, Laura was saying, it's also in here, that she was inspired by this. She had a job as a school librarian, Laura did. And there was this one instance, like, a security guard kind of like startled her while she was at work. And this story just kind of like
appeared to her?
Appeared.
Okay.
Because that's basically the opening of what happens here is the main character, Avery, is working as a school librarian and gets really startled by this new security guard. She's like, who are you? But she's jumpy because she's in witness protection program. And she's always jumpy. But it actually turns out that she has good reason to be on this particular day because literally that day she gets like shot at and someone is trying to like get her.
Oh my goodness.
And so she ends up getting stuck with this security guard and he's the person who's like helping her.
Okay.
He just happens to be an ex-army guy. And actually she technically knows him because he was in the same... I don't remember the vernacular, but like he was one of the commanders of her brother who actually died on a mission, like under this guy's command.
Okay.
So she technically knows who he is. So there's that like tension there.
Ooh.
He doesn't realize that she knows at first. It is not.
Is he a lieutenant or a sergeant or something?
He was
captain.
Captain, I think. Commander, an army commander, former army commander, Sam Brown.
You say Sam Brown or Seth Brown?
Seth, you're right. I did say Seth. I said Sam just now, but. I have really poor eyesight and it's very dimly lit in here. I have to look really hard at everything. I'm like, I can barely see. So yes, a little bit. Thank you. It would be really great if you had a floodlight that was like right here. That's how bad my eyesight is.
I'm gonna turn on my flashlight.
Oh my gosh, you don't.
There you go, look.
You don't have to do that. Yeah, it says Seth. I know, I believe you. I didn't talk, I just said. I looked at everybody and said, Sam, oh my gosh.
Anyways.
Probably because we know someone named Sam Brown.
Probably. Anyway, so it's nonstop action because basically what ends up happening is somehow, like, information is getting leaked to this drug ring. So they keep finding them at, like, every safe house. They discover them. Places that they shouldn't find them, they discover them. And so then Seth and Avery have to figure out, how is this information getting leaked? Who's, like, what's going on? And then they just keep running. Like, it's constant running. One of the things that I thought was really strong about this is a lot of times in category, the because it's so short, the books are shorter, so the story has to be shorter. All of the action has to just speed up, move along really quickly. And oftentimes, to me, the love story will be, like, it's kind of unbelievable. And again, I love these books, but sometimes you're like, okay, like, that happened way too fast. In this one, I thought Laura did a really good job of pacing the love story, especially since there was a bit of an antagonistic view towards Seth that Avery had in the beginning. Automatically, she had these preconceived kind of dislike of him because, understandable, because of what happened to her brother. And she considered her brother's death Seth's fault.
And I'm sure they have to talk about that.
They have to talk about that, exactly. So I actually thought the way the romance was paced and played out was much more believable. And then it was just so good. Like, just the nonstop running and action was like, God, there's so much going on. And then the ending was great. And it was fabulous. It was super well done. It was very fun to read. I think I read it in like 2 afternoons. I could have read it in 1, but my oldest child is no longer napping. So he like hangs out in our room.
Quotes.
I mean, like, he does quiet rest, but like, it's in the room right next to mine, so we end up having to chat, and I'm just remind him, hey buddy, like, this is supposed to be quiet time. Mama has her quiet time, you have yours. So it took me a couple of afternoons to read, just because quiet rest time looks a little bit differently for me right now. It's not totally uninterrupted, but that being said, it was a great book. Highly recommend. Super wonderful, and can't wait to read more from Laura.
It's exciting.
This was the first one that you read by her, right?
I read a little bit of the, was it Exposed? Expired Vows.
Expired Vows.
That's what it is.
I'm very excited.
I know
to
last,
read this book.
Last season. Yeah. I read a little bit of it, but I didn't finish it. So,
yeah. Amazing.
Madeline,
do you want to go next?
Sure. I will go next. So, I will start with a book that we actually got sent a arc of this season, and didn't have a certain spot for it, but I especially really wanted to read it, so I was like, oh, bookshelf episode, perfect. So it is The Songbird of Hope Hill.
Oh, okay. Tell
by
us everything.
Kim Vogel Sawyer.
We read her.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the pod, yes. So we got to interview her last season, and we read Tapestry of Grace.
That book undid us all at the end.
It was
a great book.
Very good. And let me tell you, Songbird of Hope Hill, similar. Very similar in its feelings.
Really?
Yes. It was very, very good.
Okay. I wish you could all see Madeline's face right now. She's literally like, I'm like so curious to hear what this book is about.
It definitely took me by surprise. Obviously, we have, like, I have a NetGalley arc of it, so I didn't read a back cover copy. So, like, from page one, I was like, whoa, what's going on in this book? But the premise is this family, a reverend and his wife and their son, their grown son, who their ministry is, they basically own this large home that is essentially Hope Hill is what it's called. And it's essentially like a home for, a shelter for women.
What year
but
is the
it's 1895 in Texas is the setting.
Nice.
Like central Texas, like kind of Waco. But they go like, so they have this shelter, this home for women. But the reverend and his grown son go to brothels. Before, like, they open
okay
and for the evening and preach a sermon to these women and then tell them, ask them to come to Hope Hill.
What do the owners of the brothels think about all this?
Not great. Not happy about that. So, like, this whole reverend and his wife and his son, their whole life has been fraught. Like, they've had to move so many times because people have, like, burned down the homes that they've been living in and, like, hate crimes against their family because of the ministry that they're doing. Anyways, they end up in this town, the town called Tulsi, Texas, which I don't know if that's a real town or not. That
probably is. I can't look it up.
Anyways, guys, this book was, it was beautiful. It was not an action adventure in any way.
Sure.
It was.
Wait, in any way? Weren't like brothel owners after them and burned down their house?
No, that had happened to them before.
Oh, okay.
Now that they're living in this house. There wasn't anybody attacking them.
Okay.
It was...
What was the name of the town?
Tulsi. T-U-L-S-E-Y. Is it real? Who knows?
T-U-L-S-E-Y.
I literally just finished this, like, 2 hours ago. Less than that.
I don't think so.
It is based on a true story. So that is beautiful.
Oh, okay.
About an actual reverend who had this ministry with his wife and his family. And that's what he did in Texas.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And pulled women out of prostitution and gave them a new start to life. So basically they educated them and they taught them skills and then basically found them jobs.
That's amazing.
So they could go and
I
work.
Love that.
And often the women would get, like, housekeeping jobs or, like typing type of job, secretarial type of work. And a lot of these women would get married and they host weddings at Hope Hill. And, like, really, like, beautiful redemption after redemption. But the story centers around the actual family because their son is not actually their biological son. But he doesn't, he's, like, 26 and he doesn't know this. And he, like, finds this out in the book. And he was, like, the child of a prostitute who, but she wasn't a prostitute at the time. She had been, like...
At the house. At one of their houses.
She had had a child out of wedlock.
Yes.
Then gave the baby to the reverend and his wife, and then became a prostitute after that point, because she had nowhere else to live. So she wasn't a prostitute at the time.
Is that what inspired the start of their ministry?
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, it did. So they took this child and raised him as their own. But it's really about him. Ephraim is his name. And then his mom, not his biological mom, but his adopted mother, Ophelia. And then this one And then this one prostitute, Birdie.
Ooh.
Who is the songbird of Hope Hill.
She his age?
Yes. Well, she's like 18. But they do end up together in the book. But I wouldn't call it like I wouldn't really call it a romance. But it's a historical fiction. It's so beautiful. It's one of those Christian fiction novels that it's like, okay, if you're not a Christian, I wouldn't recommend that you read this book.
Okay.
Because the themes here are, like, I mean, I don't want to use the term heavy-handed, because that seems negative.
Right.
But they're, like, they're very Christian.
Overt?
Like, this is all, like, this is about Christians and the struggles that we go through. Like, one of the main themes is, like, hypocrisy is a huge theme in this book. And, like, how the church is so quick to judge, you know. We, the church, are so quick to judge when we should be the people who are the slowest to judge, truly.
Yeah.
Because of all that's been done for us, and that it's been done for everyone, but we have the knowledge of it having been done. Like, we know what Jesus did.
Yeah.
And yet we still are so quick to throw stones and to point fingers. So that's a really, like, beautifully woven theme in this book. And that's for Christians. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
absolutely.
That's for a Christian to read. And I think, something that I loved so much about this was that, like, not everything was okay in the end. Like, not all the ends were tied up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
interesting.
nobody had a happily ever after. Like,
was it like a sad ever after?
No, it wasn't sad. It was just realistic. It was
yeah.
And the whole book felt that way. It was like, there are so many things in life that.
Yeah.
And that was a big theme too. Like, bad things happen to you that you have no control over. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you made bad choices and you shouldn't have, and now your life is really sucky because of it. And like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you going to choose to think about? What are you going to, how are you going to live your life?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are you going to wallow? Oh, this happened to me and it had no right to happen to me and it wasn't my fault. Or are you going to say, okay, Jesus, what are you going to do with me? Mm-hmm. How can you use this broken person, these broken things? That's because that's what he does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the whole book was like, everybody in this book had something, like broken pieces that they were like holding, and or demons or whatever you want to call it, a past or whatever, that they were working through, even the strong Christians in the book. I just thought it was beautiful. It's like, yes, nobody has this like perfect life. Like, everybody has things that make it hard to say yes to Jesus every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the beautiful thing is like these types of stories where it's like you just witness like, wow, these people have really terrible lives and they just like wake up and choose to say yes to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And look how much fuller their lives are
in
spite of all these nasty things that happen to them because they choose to say yes to Jesus.
That's right.
Look, they're like opening the door to his blessing, opening the door. He has never seen the righteous forsaken. Like, he doesn't forsake his people. And it was just beautiful. It was just really well done. Definitely a book for Christians. Definitely tons of redemption. It doesn't really have, like, this cookie-cutter ending of... I mean, the two people that you want to get together, they get together, they start their own ministry. And the epilogue, they have children, they've started their own ministry together. So it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Ophelia, the mom... she passes away, like she has a heart disease. Like, there's just like things that like are just real life stuff.
Real.
Yeah.
But it's so well done. I really enjoyed it.
I feel like through this podcast, because I had heard of Kim Vogel Sawyer, but I had not actually, I don't think, had read any of her stuff. And then after last year, I was like, oh, this woman is chef's kiss. Like, she writes a good story. I definitely want to read this.
It felt like a woman, like you couldn't write something like this unless you had like a very rich walk with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Like it made me want to sit down and talk with Kim again.
Yeah.
Just because like the richness of her life is coming through in this story. And it was really cool.
That reminds me, have you ever heard a worship song and like it moves you in this way that you're like, there is no way that someone wrote that song? Not in a place that they walked through something really hard and came out on the other side still praising Jesus.
100%.
And I feel like that's the same vibe that I get. And it's also interesting because I think it's like, and yet I will still praise you. Because I think a lot of times that there's this picture of like, oh, Christians have it easy. One could argue we have it easy in some ways because we have a reliance on Jesus. But in some ways it's so much harder because there's things that we don't want to rely on God for. We want to rely on ourselves, like all this kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that out of perfection, but I'm just saying like there's actually points that like deciding to follow Jesus is one of the hardest and best decisions you will ever make in your life.
Yes.
Because it's not always easy to say yes to that in the moments where like you and your churchy term flesh want, do you know, something else. And it's like, and yet I will praise you. So it's interesting that like, because in the last book, I feel like she had so many stories of redemption that were unexpected, and I remember being like, oh, this was such a pleasant surprise. So I'm sure in the ending of this one it was just in a different way of the realistic side that like that looks different for some people, like for every person. You know, and so that's like a beautiful kind of summary.
When does this book come out?
Oh yes, this book when we're recording this, it hasn't come out yet. It comes out April 9th of this year.
Awesome.
So pick it up. The Songbird of Hope Hill, a novel by Kim Vogel Sawyer.
Yeah. And if you like that one, I'm sure that you'd also like Tapestry of Grace that we read last season.
Oh, yeah.
Probably any of her.
Yeah.
Any of her.
Yeah. If you're into this, you'll like her books for sure.
Yeah. On a totally different note, this is not historical fiction. So
all of mine are historical fiction.
But here's the thing, it checks out. Mine are a wide array of like the things that I love. Yeah, so makes perfect sense. Okay, so the book I read is Love in Tandem by Becca Kinzer. And I have to read the back cover copy because, ladies, let me tell you what. I, like Morgan, was reading a lot of books and getting excited about way too many books. And let's just say, have you ever been to a buffet or like a lovely party? Maybe not a buffet because I'm not really a buffet person, except maybe a Chinese buffet.
What do you mean you're not a buffet?
Okay, here's the thing.
Who's not a buffet person?
Well, I think it's because
for everyone.
Well, listen, it's because in the 90s, we went out to buffets every freaking Sunday. There was like Ponderosa, Old Country Buffet, and Golden Corral. And I think I've been buffeted out, if that's possible. Except for a Chinese, buffet.
Okay, give me an example of what's on your plate at a buffet.
Ooh, yeah, what's on your plate?
Okay, well, are we talking like we're going for the breakfast buffet?
Old Country Buffet.
Sunday lunch.
Okay. Well, first off, do a round. I need to assess the situation. Then I'm usually going to start with like a vegetable, maybe some fried chicken, mm-hmm. some mashed potatoes. Wow. Then I'll go for like maybe, are we talking like adult Odette or kid Odette? Like right now, if I went to or up to buffet. Oh.
Cause that's kid Odette. Kid
Odette. Kid Odette.
And then I would go get a huge plate of fries.
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
And then, I was going to say broccoli as an adult, but like fries as a kid. And then I would get ice cream, and then I'd usually go get more, either like maybe like a roll or something, and then like more ice cream. Sure. I would get like soda, just like here's the thing.
This is everything I want. Just like so much food.
Wait, can I tell you guys a life hack?
We used to have one of our family
gathering reunions?
Like reunions at a buffet. We were there for hours. So then like you eat lunch, and then like you're stuffed. But then you just chat for a few hours, and then you're like, you know what? It's dinner time. And then you go back and get more food.
I think some of my family listens, but they'll appreciate this. So we, a couple years ago, this is maybe 2019, early 2020, we were meeting like my dad's brothers for like a family reunion. And because when you know how it is, like when grandparents pass away, like it's kind of the busyness and like they usually are kind of the glue, and it's not like you don't see each other. It's just a lot easier, I think, for the reunions to get farther and farther between.
Yes.
So my one uncle was like, we should all hang out. It's really great. So we go to the Golden Corral. Yes. And we literally went during the breakfast time. So we paid the breakfast price, but stayed through lunch.
Nice.
Yes. That's how you do it.
Is the breakfast price cheaper?
Oh. Yeah. And then last year, when I was in Florida with my family on vacation, we were in Florida and we wanted to meet because one of my dad's brother lives there. And he was like, hey, we should meet up. And I literally said to my mom, I was like, can we please just not go to the Golden Corral? Like, we're in freaking Florida. I'd love to go. So literally, they text us the address to the Golden Corral. So we literally are in Florida, where there's like so many food options, and literally we went. And here's the thing: the one benefit is you pay one price, and regardless of your food situation,
yes,
you can get whatever you want.
Yeah. Which I think is why people choose it for gatherings like that, because it's like it doesn't matter how picky anybody is. There's something for everyone at the Golden Corral.
I would say though,
the Golden Corral
family reunions at Chili's, I would say better than family reunions at.
I also like Chili's.
I've never had a family reunion at Chili's. I wouldn't know, but I've only ever had a family reunion at the Golden Corral.
I mean, okay, when I say family reunion, I mean like you specifically have like a family like meetup. Like it's maybe not a reunion is a strong word, but go to Chili's. I'm a big fan of Chili's, like to this day.
I've had large family dinners at Chili's.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Family meetups.
Yeah. Well, because I will say that just like a buffet, Chili's is kind of like the restaurant buffet, because here's the thing. My family is a very variety of eaters, my immediate family. I love Mexican food. My dad likes Mexican food. My mom likes it. My sister and brother really do not. My brother-in-law likes it. My nephew loves it. So it's like a wide, so we can't go to a Mexican restaurant. But Chili's has Mexican food.
Yeah,
my brother loves chicken fingers and pizza. They have chicken fingers there. My dad wants fajitas. They have fajitas. Pizza. Yeah. So it's whatever. My mom likes to eat healthy. So does my sister. You know, so it's like you can have a wide variety. And you get chip, and their salsa is banging.
Actually, their salsa is good.
It's good.
They have good salsa at Chili's. Yeah. I'm a fan. Sold.
Let's go right now. Next podcast episode, record a Chili's.
Oh my gosh, the background noise.
Could you imagine?
The waiter's just like coming up to the table.
We're like, excuse us a second, pause.
Yes, can I get you anything else?
I feel God in this Chili's tonight.
I feel God in this Chili's
tonight. Amazing. Okay, yeah, anyways.
I'm so sorry. Becca Kinzer, have you ever been to a buffet?
Okay, so.
Go ahead.
Wow, I forget where I was going with that.
You're reading a bunch of books at once.
Yes, thank you, Morgan. Thank you, thank you. So what I was saying was, if you've been to a buffet, and like, do you know how sometimes you get, I feel this way about a Chinese buffet specifically,
okay.
But like you go there and you're so excited, you don't know what to start with first. So you like get a plateful and then you sit down and then someone else brings something over. You're like, where did you see that?
Yeah,
that is literally how I felt about reading this week for the podcast. So I feel like I did not get as far as I wanted in Love and Tandem, but I will absolutely be reading this book. And I'm going on a work trip tomorrow, so I'm in my hotel tomorrow night. I'll definitely be reading this.
Oh, nice.
But it's called Love and Tandem, and I'm going to read the back cover copy. She's perfectly content leading a quiet life in her small hometown. He's an adventurer with an unquenchable wanderlust. The two couldn't be more opposite if they tried, but a tandem bicycle and a 500-mile road trip might just change all that.
Oh.
After a failed engagement and her mother's battle with cancer, Charlotte Carter's life is finally turning around now that she landed a dream job teaching music. What she didn't see coming was the imminent closure of the school's music program. She's determined to save it, even if that means getting creative. There is no way she's chalking this up to just another failure in her book of recent embarrassments. Scroll too far, sorry. Zach Bryant is back in town just long enough to see his brother Ben get married, and then he's traveling off into the world again. He never imagined he'd run into Charlotte Carter, his brother's ex-fiance.
What?
Or that everyone would believe he and Charlotte were an item. He certainly didn't dream up he'd be riding on a tandem bicycle hundreds of miles with her.
What a great setup.
With her in an attempt to raise funds for a defunct music program. How can he say no when the prize money would help him out of his financial predicament too?
Wow.
Charlotte is sure she can set aside her differences with Zach long enough to cross the finish line and win the giant cash prize. .. Can't she? A few hundred miles in, she's questioning her deeply held assumptions about Zach and wondering if maybe tandem biking is only the start of their biggest adventure yet.
Oh.
Okay, listen. Here's the little bullet points from Kindle.
Okay.
Fake dating, romantic comedy by Becca Kinzer. Here we go. Here for it. Opposites attract theme, clean romance.
Love it. I love all of those things.
So here's the thing. I am not as far in this book as I wish I was for this episode, because I know that y'all both read your whole books, but also, no shame, because I was at the buffet of books.
She was at the buffet, and she didn't even see that other thing over there.
And she here's the thing.
Get sampling all of the goodness.
All the things. Wait to hear about the other books I was reading. But what I will say is, this book from the get-go is so, so, so interesting. It has all the makings of the quippiness, the back and forth. The book opens, so Charlotte's a music teacher and she's about to go on summer break. And literally, she sees this bee and she's trying to not panic, which, like, side note, listeners.
Like an insect bee.
Like an insect bee, okay. Yes. So she's outside and she's like, oh my God, this bee. And it's like flying by and she's like, I don't want to panic because then it'll like attract me, which is a real thing. Listeners, I will tell you, as someone who has once almost jumped out of a moving car to get away from a bee.
Oh,
as a child, my mother had to literally, and my sister, hold me down. But anyways, I have learned that bees are actually attracted to fear. I'm not saying this exaggeratedly.
They can smell it?
They can smell it. And, or maybe it's just the freaking out that attracts them. Whatever it is, the movement.
Right.
Whatever.
Makes more sense.
But I will tell you that since I have decided that I need to act as though I'm not bothered by bees, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this test came into play a couple summers ago. I was sitting outside and a bee flew between my eyeglass and my eye. And I had to remain calm and just take off my glasses. Because had I freaked out, it would have stung my eyeball.
That's true. It would have. That's horrible. That's actually horrifying.
But I'm just saying. So anyways, so there's bees flying around. And it feels very relatable because you're like, been there. We've all experienced that. Here's the thing. I don't like bees. If yellow jackets, I have a slight allergy, so I'll like swell up astronomically, and it's a whole thing. But so, and one time I got stung as a kid on my neck from a wasp, and then apparently this like childhood memory episode. But and my mom stuck mud on it, and I just remember like not being able to move my neck because she was like, "We need to get it. It'll get the stinger out." Yeah. Yeah, but I just remember being like, "The mud is
Little House on the Prairie." I don't know. I've never executed it, but
country living, country living,
country life, baby. Mom angles.
Mom angles and mommy odor.
She was, I will say, because all the neighbors knew that she was a nurse. So if anything happened to their kids, they would it was like they knew that she was on like, and the amount of time she would like run over, and then she would determine if they needed to go to the hospital, like, or the, you know, ER. And then they didn't have urgent care, so it would have been like the ER or anyways.
That's helpful to live close to someone.
Oh yeah, well, and like everyone knew that because she was a trained nurse, and then she did that before she was a stay-at-home mom, and then and now she's back to being a nurse. Anyways, so. Back to the story. So it opens basically this bee, and so the kids are like, there's a lot happening. There's a lot of little kids, and they're like trying to get on the bus. She's like, oh my god, I made it. And then right before she goes in the building, this little boy is trying to get the bee away from her, and so he throws a ball and hits her in the face, so she has a bloody nose, and she's just, and he's like, oh my god, she's like, just please go. So then she's and it's just like the dialogue, just everything about it is perfect. So she's walking into school to collect her things to like pack up, and the principal comes, who she's like friends with. He basically tells her, by the way, I'm so sorry, the music program has been defunded.
She's standing there with a bloody nose.
Yeah, and she finally can look down, but because like the ball hit her in the face, and he's like, I'm so sorry, this is inconvenient timing, but I need to tell you this. And he's like, listen, but he goes, there's this eccentric millionaire in town who says he's gonna, he is literally, like literally, and he,
like you do,
and he apparently before has said that he's gonna die, and he hasn't, but apparently this time it's for real, and
it's really happening,
and so he put contests out, like, for people to compete in,
okay,
and so the contest is literally, that, you know, he doesn't really know what it is, but it involves something outdoors, and she's like, oh, that's not me, like,
did you see me with the bee just now?
She's like, ah. And he goes, but it's for like a couple. And the prize money is for your wedding. And there's $25,000 prize. And so.
Only in romance land does this crap happen. Like, nobody gives a prize. And it's like, here's what you absolutely. This has to pay for your wedding.
Well, I think, here's the thing.
No,
I think,
that's not how it works.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I don't know that that's a stipulation. I haven't gotten that far into the book, but I'm saying that was what the newspaper advertisement, it was like this goodbye letter, yeah. So, and then, yeah.
That's
and
like, so, that's like in so many romance books, you'll be like, oh, so-and-so died, and you're set to inherit, but you have to get married before you turn 30. It's like, what? No.
And I'm reading that, I'm like, let's go.
Let's go. Listen, if someone...
But in real life, that it's illegal to do that. You cannot do that. Nobody can stipulate that in a contract.
In a will, they can. In a will, they can.
In their own personal stuff.
Yeah, they can. Absolutely.
They can't stipulate that someone gets married. Oh. They have to get married before they can inherit.
They can stipulate, like, what age they have to be at before they can inherit.
Oh, yeah, but they can't stipulate that they have to be married before they can inherit. That's what I'm talking about.
They can't stipulate the 530 thing. I don't think they could stipulate, like, something about you as a individual who's receiving the inheritance. Like, that they wouldn't want it to... That I couldn't be single and receive the inheritance, couldn't they?
That... I'm pretty sure that that is not how it works.
Does anyone know anything about wills and laws? Can you help us with this?
Is anyone here a lawyer?
Also, are you single?
I don't think... Also, are you single?
Do you have an inheritance that you need to be married for?
That you need to be married for? Oh, because, Odette's your girl.
I was going to say, listen, if someone said, Odette, you inherit all this money if you get married... Let's do this.
The jig is up. Let's go. You can't. I don't think you can do that. Maybe you could at one time, but not anymore. Not in 2024.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You're assuming that the will is being written in 2024. What if the will was written decades ago?
Oh.
Like, when a will is executed is not when it's written.
I still don't think that flies. Somebody look it up. Not Odette, she's Madeline. It's you. You have to look it up.
Odette's in the middle of talking about her book.
There's no way.
We were just like both just like looking at each other. Like, yeah, Morgan, like.
Well, because Morgan's phone we're using for the podcast. Right. She's like, please.
Oh, wait, it's me.
I wish. Anyways.
I'd be happy to look this up.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be curious to see. I always thought that you could put, because it's like, You, because I'm not signing anything.
That's like a fiction thing. There's no way.
Because here's the difference is, I'm not signing a contract saying I adhere to this. It's that someone is saying, this is my will of if I pass, this is how I want my funds, my investments, my money distributed.
Yeah, that's it. But if it's like, hey, Odette, you inherit this money. However, mm-hmm. you have to be married before you can inherit. I don't think that's something that is allowed to be stipulated.
Do you think that it's maybe something that someone could stipulate, but it wouldn't hold up in court?
Correct. Correct. For sure.
So someone could put it in their will.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's not going to fly. Mm-hmm. Like, that can be contested in a big way.
There's no way that I'm going to find an answer to that. Very specific question.
Okay. There's no way. Listen, any lawyers out there or women who have sons who are lawyers. Please.
There's a lot of competent female lawyers out there. I just want to make sure to call them out right now. We want to hear from you, too.
But for this particular love story.
I think that this Jess specifically only wants to hear from male lawyers. That's what I'm hearing from her. I don't think she does want to hear from the competent female lawyers.
Listen. Any lawyer who knows the answer to this question wants. That's really true. Going off the rails. Anyways.
You know what? Any lawyer who can help us with this is fine. Regardless.
Yeah. I will say that.
But if you are handsome and single and male,
please email us.
Please.
redeeminglippodcast@gmail.com.
Wait, can I tell you ladies about a nightmare that I had recently?
Whoa. Yes.
Maybe not.
Sure. Oh no, I'm scared.
There's this local church who recently has put up a billboard like in front of their church, like an electronic one. It's like on their property. Uh-huh. And I literally pass it. I don't know why it's, because it's like a two-sided billboard. Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like close to my house. Yeah. And I had this nightmare the other day that my dad, because he really wants me to find love, you know. I've talked about this on the pod before, yes. I'm sure. And I'll tell other stories in the future. But anyways, I had this dream that he took a picture of me, put a QR code on the billboard. I was like, my daughter's looking for love. And I remember in the dream being impressed that he knew what a QR code was. And I was just sitting with a friend and my phone started blowing up and I was like, it was like all this like, and I was like, what is happening? Because he literally put my phone number in the dream on the billboard.
No way. But your phone started blowing up with like suitors?
Yeah, but they were like.
Does your dad listen to this podcast? Because he's going to hear this and be like, that's not a bad idea.
No, he doesn't listen to this podcast.
There you go. Lucky
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, don't give him any ideas.
Listen, I could tell him though, if he wanted to listen to this, he could put it on half speed and then everything I say he would like. Totally, yeah, because he says I talk fast, which is, like, no one gets that. Anyways, so yeah, so all I have to say is, this book is great. The parts I've read, it reads very, very fast, like a rom-com. It's very quippy. It has the dialogue and the excitement, and you just know, because her ex-fiance's wedding is happening this weekend, like, you just know that there's going to be.
Man.
Yeah. So, I didn't get as far as I want to, but I will absolutely be finishing it. And also, here's my thing. I think a situation like that, where you are forced to compete in something, especially with like forced proximity and a competition being outside. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, if you're going on a 500-mile bike ride, you probably are camping or something along the way. Unless it's like the kind where you can like stop and stay at a hotel or something. But like, you're spending a lot of time together.
I wouldn't do a bike ride like that unless I could stop and stay at a hotel.
Yeah.
That would be a stipulation for me.
Tandem or not, just like a stipulation.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't even be a part of this.
Being honest. Apparently, though, if you ever go to Ireland, I've had friends do this. Okay. When I was invited, I didn't have any money to go. But anyways, this is years ago. But I went, my friends went on to Ireland, and they did this bike tour. And you like would literally like they would take your luggage from town to town, and you would bike ride, and then you would show up into the town. But it was like you could be leisurely about it. Like it wasn't competitive.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Also, I should say for this contest, you're not competing against anyone. Like it's like they choose one couple to do this thing.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, but it feels competitive because if you don't finish, you're not going to get $25,000. Nor your music program, nor whatever financial situation Axka has going on.
Yeah, that's true. Has this book recently come out?
It actually came out April 2nd, 2024.
That's today.
That's today.
That's today that we're recording. So shout out Kendra.
Becca.
It's because we just released the Kendra Burkeyes episode.
Shout out to you too, Kendra. But
specifically Becca. I'm very excited.
Happy release day.
Happy release day. Wow. I feel like I should edit that out. Becca, happy release day.
All good. It's all good.
Anyways, that's what I got.
Okay, it's me again.
Okay, so for my next pick, technically I read two books, but they were very short and they kind of go together. So these are both middle grade, and it's sort of a series. I'll explain it. So this is by Amanda Trumpower, and it's two different series that she has. The one is called Collar Cases, and this is probably for ages, okay, it says on here, ages 7 to 11. I want to tell you right now, I started reading this to my four-year-old, and he was really into it. Now, he actually really likes chapter books, and he's like a big audiobook guy, so maybe...
No surprise there, maybe his mother.
Right. Don't compare him to other four-year-olds, but like, but he understood it and was tracking with the story and was like asking questions about it. So like, you know.
Take that as you will.
Right. Yeah. So, and Collar Cases has, hold on, I've got to look at the physical. I bought the physical copy because I knew I'd want to read it to my guys. It has a couple of books already out in the series. She just recently did, Amanda just recently did a Patreon campaign, but I think it was for the newest in the second series. Yeah. Okay. So there's four books in the Collar Cases series. And I read the first one, The Case of the Robbed Recipe.
Oh, tell us everything.
Okay, so let me give you the little whoosh from the back. Blurb. Solve the mystery. Investigative journalists Mittens Meow and Alex Digger hurry to the rescue when Alex's favorite baker discovers a shocking theft which threatens the future of her business. Can Mittens and Alex uncover the culprit in time? They did. I just want to tell you they did. Mittens Meow is a cat. Alex Digger is a dog. They're investigative reporters together. And this was a delight. It was this was so much fun. I love reading middle grade anyways. Adorable. It was so much fun. And I will tell you, as I was reading it, I kept being like, oh man, like this, I would have loved this. Like as a little kid.
Yes, I love that, yeah.
This is so much fun. And so, so this was that, the setup is the, this very old basset hound has been making dog treats for forever, and she releases these new flavor recipes. Stop. But then someone stole, they robbed the most recent recipe.
Some animal? Some.
Well, they're all animals. Every character is animals. They're all animals in this universe. And so then Mittens and Alex have to go and find out who did it and kind of figure it out. And actually there's like, you figure it out and then there's this very nice redemption in the end because it was someone, spoiler alert, it was someone who worked for Grandma Bassett.
Oh, wow.
And so then she's classic. Like, why did you do it? And he had some sort of reason. And she was like, I forgive you.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
So it was great. But right,
forgiveness.
And Alex and Mittens is very serious. She takes her job.
She's with a name like Mittens, absolutely right. You would. Mittens Meow.
Mittens Meow.
100%. She's an investigative journalist.
These were so fun, you guys. I had such a blast reading these. Mittens takes her job very seriously. She is very, like, she's on it. Alex is a loose cannon. He obviously is a good writer because he keeps his job, but he believes in aliens. All he ever wants to do is snack. Like, he's just always hungry.
What kind of dog is he?
I don't know. Hard to say. It probably says. I don't remember that detail. It's kind of shaggy.
He's kind of shaggy.
Maybe some sort that. Of. Here's a different artist rendition of him.
Oh. He looks kind of like a golden retriever or something.
Yeah, but like maybe shaggier though. Not like.
Well, did you know that there's different types of golden retrievers? There's long-haired and short-haired.
Maybe he's a long-haired golden retriever. I don't know.
Also, it depends on when you get the dog fixed as to how long their hair can get.
Really? As a male. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Anyways,
I know random things.
So then the second book I read is called Power Pup Number One, Power Pup versus Tommy Triggerfinger.
Who is Tommy Triggerfinger?
Wow, I'm going to get there.
Okay.
The villain, clearly. But well, this yeah, book like is technically for,
what
does it say? This is ages 7 to 12, which is the same, but it's definitely written at a higher level than The Case of the Robbed Recipe, the Collar Cases book. Thank you.
I'm giving some lighting to Morgan here.
Thank you. I can read the back cover copy. Yeah. Here we go. Oh, the back is so fun. It's written, like, the back cover copy looks like a newspaper article. Bow Wow Bark, new hero in town. Who is Power Pup? Superheroes swoop into Bow Wow.
Canine investigative journalist Alex Digger settles in for an ordinary day of reporting truth and busting bad guys with his best friend Mittens Meow. But today is anything but ordinary. When an earthquake threatens the citizens of Bow Wow, a flying superhero called Power Pup swoops in to save the day with his super strength. And just in time, someone in Catburg City is up to no good. Strange customer behavior, violent outbursts, and a seemingly random connection to local bakeries have the police baffled. Can Alex Mittens and Power Pup use their super teamwork to save the city from chaos?
Ooh. Can I just say that, like, there's bakeries in both these books?
Yes.
Me too.
Also, I mean, like, are there recipes in the book?
Oh, there's not recipes, but I have something to say about the bonus content of both.
Oh, sorry.
But there's no recipes. So anyways, the thing that was cool about this, it says the same age group, but again, my son is 4. I absolutely would and have started reading The Case of the Robbed Recipe with him. He's tracking. Power Pup is written to me at a very different level. My 4-year-old would probably be a little bit, like, he would get bored with this because it's not, it builds more. Yeah, like, okay. It's got more meat to the story.
Yeah.
So they feel kind of at 2 different age levels.
So this is, like, probably early middle, or if someone has advanced reading as a young child, versus, like, this one's probably like actually 6. Middle.
Like, yeah. 6, for sure. You could give a 6-year-old this.
Yeah.
It's very short. The actual story itself is 50 pages.
Oh, nice.
52 pages. And this one is like 120, so it's like double the length.
Yeah. So that one is probably actually for a middle school age child.
Probably. So this one, again, it's still the same people though, which I thought was fun. So there's 4 books in the Collar Cases, the same main characters, right? Whatever. the Collar Cases book versus the Power Pup book. There's 2 of those, the Power Pups, and there's 4 of the Collar Cases. But it follows the same people in the same universe, and they're still doing the same kind of stuff. In this one, it's super delightful because literally there's this new reporter that comes in while they're working on, you know, they're getting their assignments and everything, and there's this new reporter that comes in, and it's a mild-mannered newspaper reporter wearing glasses, little messenger bag, just a golden retriever, and immediately you're like, oh, he's perfect. It's a Superman situation. He's Clark Kent. Like, okay. That's, he even has a name that sounds kind of like Clark Kent. I don't remember what it, Calvin something.
And does she have fun with dog and cat names clearly in this book? Because have you ever looked up like fun dog and cat names that are like plays on words or plays on like human names? Have you ever gone down that rabbit trail?
Mittens Meow to me is the most like tongue-in-cheek one that she has. Okay. I have not ever gone down that route.
Once you start, you won't be able to stop. It's similar to the vibes of Parks and Rec, where they're like, we got a great name for a dog, the animal control, Bark Obama. Like, that's...
Oh, that kind of stuff.
Like when you, like, go down that path.
Yeah, when you go down, you can't...
Yes,
yeah.
So back out. Love it. But anyway, so, like, in this one, they'll all 3 be out reporting, and then all of a sudden, Calvin's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And, like, he just leaves, and then Power Pup shows up.
Yes.
And then Power Pup leaves, and Mittens Meow is always mad that she can't get an interview with him, and then Calvin like scurries back in, like tying his tie, and he's like, so sorry guys, bathroom emergency. And she's like, oh my gosh, you missed everything. Like every single time. And it's really funny. And like literally in this one, it's like it's a drug smuggling ring.
Oh, they're, wow.
Yeah.
Like actual drugs or like
catnip.
Like,
that's extra
so funny.
An extra strong catnip that is being put into these cupcakes and distributed all over the city because this guy is like trying to take over the world, Tommy Triggerfinger. And
what kind of animal is Tommy Triggerfinger?
Good one. I don't remember.
Can we guess? Like a raccoon or fox?
Snake? I think it is
a sly fox.
A sly fox.
Maybe I'm trying to find an image. There's some of his goons. I don't remember. That's a really good question. But I'm not a detail reader, clearly. We all knew that.
She needs us for the plot.
But he's the villain. It's whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're like the catnip's being like put in these cupcakes, and so that's they've got to like figure it all out. But the one thing that I think, so these were just, they were very fun. They were quick reads. They're middle grade books. But something that Amanda does in all of these is there's so much supplementary bonus material in each of these books. It is so fun. So each book has like a devotional section.
Oh, I love that.
Where it literally, so it's about like the premise of
there's a Bible verse.
Oh, I love that. And then
it's like something that you can talk through with your kid. Like, hey, this character did this in this situation. This is how it happened with him. What would you do in that situation? What do you think the Bible says about that? Like, it's a really cool devotional tie-in to the book.
I love that.
Both books have that.
That's great.
And then, this is very fun, Alex's glossary. So Alex is the dog. He says, you know what? Sometimes Mittens uses big words and I don't always understand them. So I kept notes throughout this whole book about all the words that she used.
Oh, that's so fun.
I thought, I don't know what that means. I'm going to share them with you in case you didn't know what that means either. So there's like a little vocab lesson. That was very cute. And then it has this little, this is the part that I was like, oh, as a kid, I would have loved this. Because it gives you an opportunity, like, if you liked this book and want to be, like, it says become a Bow Wow Barker.
Is that what they call their reporters?
Right. Yes. I love so it's so like, much. Become, go on to Collar Case, have an adult help you go on to collarcases.com, log in here, answer this question. You can help us. Do you like to read? So it's like a book club community thing. And it like brings the kids into the community aspect, which is very fun. And so,
that's fantastic. So, yeah,
I know. I was like, this is such a, like, I will be purchasing the rest of these. They're 100%. Like, we are actually, spoiler alert for another episode, we are going to be interviewing Amanda in an upcoming episode. I'm very excited. So she had sent us digital copies. As soon as I found out about the premise of the books, I was like, I'm ordering these physical copies myself. So I bought these because I just knew that this would be something that my kids would totally be interested. I'll be buying the rest of these for sure because
that's awesome.
I want these on my shelves forever. They were very, very fun. Highly recommend.
I love that so much. Would y'all like to read or have me read a few of these dog type names that I was mentioning?
Yes. Please do.
100%. Okay. So, Arf Vader.
Okay.
Harry Potter.
Potter.
Love it.
Indiana Bones.
Sure.
Yep.
Jude Paw. Mutt Damon.
That's a good one.
Winnie the Pooch.
Give us a couple more.
Chewbarca.
Love it.
Sure.
James Earl Bones.
That's a great one.
Jabba the Mutt. Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. Screaming.
That's hilarious.
Check this one out for Harry Potter fans. J.K. Growling.
J.K. Growling. Oh my gosh.
Funny.
That's hilarious.
Bilbo Waggins.
I love that one.
Mary Poppins. Sherlock Bones.
Sherlock Bones. There's definitely been a book written with a character that was Sherlock Bones.
Also, I will tell you, once you start going down that rabbit trail, or that dog trail, I should say, that puppy trail.
Puppy trail.
Dip on.
You lost out.
Love it.
It's,
love
anyways, it. So, just had to share.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So am I going again?
Yes, please do.
All right. Okay, so my second book that I picked to share is not a new release at all. Ooh. It was written like 10 years ago.
Oh.
So this is a backlist title, and it's by Lori Benton.
Oh, I don't know that I ever heard of Lori Benton.
I had not either.
Oh.
And it's called The Pursuit of Tamsin Littlejohn. So this is another historical fiction. Let me just read you guys the back cover. Western North Carolina, 1787.
Wow.
Well, I'm done. I'm like, okay.
She's like, yes.
I'm going to read the book now.
Immediately, yes.
To escape a threatening stepfather and an unwanted marriage, Tamsin Littlejohn enlists the aid of Jessie Bird, a frontiersman she barely knows, to spirit her away from Morganton, North Carolina, as the two men, intent on seeing her recovered, prove relentless in their hunt. This font is really messing me up for a second. A frontiersman, okay, she enlists the aid of Jessie Bird, a frontiersman she barely knows, to spirit her away from Morganton, North Carolina, west beyond the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Oh, okay.
Trouble pursues as the two men, intent on seeing her recovered, prove relentless in their hunt. Trouble awaits in the form of divided frontier community. Across the mountains, the state of Franklin has been declared, yet many settlers remain loyal to North Carolina. Chaos reigns, thwarting Tamsin and Jesse's hastily cobbled plan to keep her safe. With her pursuers ever nearing the region in turmoil, neighbors grown suspicious of her presence, Tamsin's safety is soon put in greater jeopardy. Gaining the freedom she longs for will mean running yet again to the most unlikely refuge imaginable, the Cherokees, a people balanced on the knife edge of war. But the biggest complication may prove to be Tamsin's growing bond with her knight in greasy buckskins, Jesse Bird. Falling in love was never part of a plan.
Wait, can you read that description again? In greasy buckskins?
Her knight in greasy buckskins.
Oh, interesting. I guess you wouldn't want non-greasy buckskins because they would be like
harder to move. They're not greasy, they're not waterproof. So
that's true. I don't know a lot about
buckskins. They stank a lot back then. So.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Sometimes stuff like that just drives that point home.
I mean, sure. I feel like medieval knights in shining armor probably smelled even worse.
Even worse, so.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Also, I would like to say, if you are going on that type of adventure, you'd want a frontiersman who understood what buckskins needed to have treatment-wise to be, you know,
to remain waterproof.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that's the kind of frontiersman
you want. That's the knowledge you want to have.
Otherwise, why call yourself a frontiersman?
Don't call yourself a frontiersman. He probably waterproof buckskins.
To be fair, he probably does not
call himself a frontiersman. He probably did not call himself a frontiersman. It's like one of those things that if you call yourself a frontiersman, you're actually
not. You're
not.
What? You have to say it.
No. Exactly. It's not real.
So, you guys know me. This has everything that I want.
This is strong catnip.
Right. This is a strong catnip from Madeline.
Strong catnip smuggled in a cupcake.
Smuggled in a cupcake.
It's a cupcake would have been a better...
A cupcake.
Good one. But it was catnip, so...
Oh. Yeah. Well, I mean, dogs eat catnip.
Yeah, but it doesn't...
Yeah, but it doesn't affect them the way it affects cats.
Anyway. Otherwise, it'd be called dognip.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not even a thing. So it's, right, it's a Georgian, it's, like, the frontier region of the United States in this time period, which I love reading those types of stories. Oh, man. I mean, forced proximity, like, constant on your at edge of your seat because they're literally being pursued. Like, yeah. Their pursuit of Tamsin Littlejohn is literally people like coming after her to try to get her.
What a great name.
I know. So this, I mean, it's so good. And then it has so many lovely cultural things that are like, they're US, but like they're so long ago that you don't get them. I love reading stories with, like, stories about Native Americans and in this time period because it's wonderful. It's fascinating, and I love learning about that, how they lived their lives. Anyway, so that's a big part of the story as well. It opens, like, her stepfather... her stepfather who married her mother after her father died when she was like in her early youth, like maybe 6 or 7. And he's just a horrible man. I mean, her father was like a wonderful person and the stepfather is just like a horrible man and he's just trying, like, she's beautiful and he's just trying to marry her off. To like the wealthiest.
As a 6-year-old?
No.
Oh.
When she comes of age. So she's she's like 20 or something.
That's like, yikes.
No. But like ends up at the very beginning, she like goes and sees this guy that her father like forces her. Like her mother has to like, she can barely breathe. She's like in this dress that cost so much money that her stepfather was like, you have to wear this dress, blah, blah, blah. She goes to see this guy, Ambrose Kincaid.
What a great name.
It is a great name. Ambrose Kincaid. And he owns a plantation in Virginia.
So he's like the wealthy. It guy.
Yeah.
Wealthy. Well, yeah.
Very wealthy. But he owns slaves. And at one point in their interaction in this tavern, like a slave comes, one of his slaves comes in to tell him something, like interrupts the conversation. So he's already irritated with the slave for interrupting the conversation. But what had happened was one of his other slaves, a female slave of his, had like been taken by some random person and like raped. Oh. And so this slave came like running in. He's like, you have to help her. Like, this is an emergency. And this guy like slaps him across the face. And Tamsin's like, OK, okay, I will never marry you.
Right.
Ever, ever, ever.
Be in your presence anymore.
I hate you, and I hope I never have to see her again. See you again, you disgusting piece of trash. It's basically how she feels. So she runs out. Her stepfather, rightfully so, her stepfather is enraged.
Yeah.
In a rage. He's like, you will see him again, and you will say yes to his marriage proposal. And she was like, I would rather die. And so he goes into this fit and literally kills her mom in front of her. Because what? He's a very violent man and he would often like beat her mother.
Oh my god.
But he like goes into this rage and literally kills her mother in front of her.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh.
It's horrible. So then she had tried to escape the night before. Like she had literally gone to the stable to get their horse and like ran into Jesse Bird. This guy he's an over mountain guy, so he keeps going back and forth, like he knows the mountains, whatever. Him and his father, who's not his father, but it's like a
found family situation.
Found family, he's kind of
a wise.
Like the term, but they use the term in the book half breed. Okay. So he's like not full Indian but partial Indian.
Jesse or the father.
The father. His name is Cade. And so they like run into Tamsin and obviously see her trying to escape. Anyways, something, I don't remember the details here, but basically Jesse ends up like walking in like after her mother has been murdered, because he left, like the stepfather left. He's like, you have, because he hit her up too. Like he hit her too. So he's like, you have 30 minutes, make yourself presentable, get the dress back on. You're going back over to see Ambrose.
Oh my gosh.
Meanwhile, her mother's literally dead.
Laying there dead.
And so, well, she's dying. She's dying. Right. She's about to die. She doesn't die yet. She says something to Tamsin first. She tells her, like, get this box, whatever. And then she dies. So Jesse, like, walks in on this. Oh, and he's like, all right. So we're leaving, right? So we're leaving? Let's leave. So yeah, like,
we're gonna
go. But basically, like, throws her over his shoulder. Is like,
she in the wedding dress
go,
still?
Go, go, no. Okay. She was in a different outfit because it was the next day. And so they, like, book it out of town. And they basically go on this grand adventure across the mountains. And it's wild. They're constantly being pursued by this guy, Ambrose Kincaid, and her stepfather. Oh. And this guy who, like, saw the two of them and had, because they're, like, lying to people. And like, oh, we're married. Right. That's why we're here. Obviously, we're married.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's very fun. But, oh my gosh, it's just crazy. They end up, like, taking some refuge at Jesse and Kate's home for a while, but then like it's the backdrop of the story. And it's so fun because on Goodreads, Lori Benton, the author, like commented, and it's the top comment on Goodreads, like commented on this book. Yeah. And she was like, hey readers, like I just wanted to give, like, I love seeing how, just a couple years ago she commented this. Oh, I love seeing how much love this book still gets. And she's like, gave a little bit of background about her inspiration for writing the novel. She read this tidbit about the state of Franklin.
Uh-huh.
And how during this time, like right after the Constitution had been ratified, there was this state that declared itself a state and like uh-huh. ratified its own constitution, and it was the state of Franklin.
Yes.
And it tried to become a state, and there was this whole big thing. It was like part of North Carolina. And like seceded and tried to become its own thing, and it was this whole big thing, and there was fighting and people died, and like eventually it was overturned and it just all became the state of North Carolina.
So it's not like Franklin, Tennessee or anything. It was actually like its own place.
No, yeah, like it was part of North Carolina. It was like part of that area of North Carolina.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, I know. And she was like, I was fascinated by this. At one point in the book, they literally like run into like a battlefield.
Oh my gosh.
And there's like people shooting.
An active battlefield.
An active battlefield. And like Tamsin and Jesse are there and they're like running and like dodging bullets. Oh, it's like crazy. Gosh. The adventure is amazing. It's like super like high stakes adventure.
Oh, I love that.
So fun.
They end up getting married, and then like they live with the Cherokees for a while, and that's really a fun part of the book too. Yeah. And it's just really well done, I think, for this type of novel, like that's set in this time period. It's really fun to read. It's like keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time. The romance is really
really fun to read as well, because it's very like opposites attract kind of romance. Mm-hmm. Come from like two completely different worlds. And then also like the redemption at the end. So like you never see it coming. Oh. Like Jesse Bird is like not like he doesn't know where his family is. Like he was taken from his family as like a 3-year-old by the Shawnees or whatever. And so he's been raised by Indians. But like you find out that he's a Kincaid and he's like Ambrose's cousin.
What?
And his name is actually Alexander Kincaid. And that Cade, his father, is actually his uncle, whose name is Theo, who is a freed slave that his grandfather is one of his grandfather's sons who he had by a slave. But it's this whole intricate crazy life and there's so much redemption and he ends up like having this massive inheritance back in Virginia and he gets all this property and he like reconciles with his grandfather.
Oh my gosh.
Like Ambrose has this like whole thing where he's like redeemed and
it's
great.
Oh man.
It was great.
It was definitely like a really good book.
A 4 or 5-star read for me, for sure.
Nice. Here's a question. How was the romance in the midst of all the high stakes?
I mean, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
I love that. Wow. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Honestly, would read.
It was very good.
Very intrigued.
Lots of people almost dying from bitter cold. But
bitter cold, here's the thing. That was a real thing then.
Yeah.
Bitter cold?
Bitter cold's a real thing now, but...
But like... I will say,
but if all you have to cover you is a bear skin,
right?
Is it
you might die
right. Unless you cut up close to the frontiersman that's with you
and his greased buckskins.
Yes, waterproof.
She goes, yes.
He's a real frontiersman.
He's a real frontiersman.
Oh my gosh, amazing! Right. This is I am loving this episode so much. Okay. So one thing I want to say is I feel like when I talked about the Becca Kinzer book,
yes,
Love and Tandem, I forgot to mention that she reach out to us, Morgan, or did her
publisher?
Her publisher. Mm-hmm. So shout out for that. And we did get an advanced copy before today. But listeners, you can absolutely
thank you, Becca Kinzer.
Yeah, thank you. And apologies again for saying someone else's name. I know you're Becca. I will say, though, it must be something in the air because there was a meeting today that I was in, and I literally had my name, like, on the work meeting. And the guy was like, what name did he say? It was, like, Cleolette, or something. Like, he said, like, or, like, no, what did he say?
Cleolette?
Clydette.
Clydette?
He goes,
I'm sorry, Clydette?
He's like, what do you think about that, Clydette? And I was like,
Who?
And then he like kind of said Claudette, and then he was like Claudette, and I was like I don't know what's happening right now.
There's no C.
That's a real name.
Where's the C? What C are you seeing?
It's also funny because I have been mistaken in multiple situations for like the DETTE of my name.
Yeah.
Right. But like here's the thing, or the ETTE. Mm-hmm. But like there's only one letter before that, so it's not like I've been called Bernadette. I've been now called Claudette
and Clydette. Claudette and Clydette, which isn't even a word, or that's not even a name.
I've never heard that in my name. I was just like, I didn't know how to respond to that because I didn't want to be like, are you talking to me? Because that feels like a weird thing to say. But also, who are you talking to?
So. But also.
Claudette, what do you think about that? Claudette, what else?
Has anyone seen Claudette?
Could have just hopped out with a French accent.
Oui, bonjour.
My name is Claudette. Thank you for calling.
I'll be like, oh, you want Claudette? Give me a second. I'm like, take off my glasses.
My Claudette persona.
Oh, maybe I should blame Claudette when things happen at work. Oh, sorry, that was Claudette.
Sorry about that. My alter ego, Claudette.
Okay. Wow, Madeline, I'm so excited. Okay, so on a totally different note here, the second book I'm going to talk about. Have you guys ever heard of the author Lynn Shannon?
I think so. Wow, that sounds very familiar to me.
So I talked about, I feel like I told
romantic
you to.
Suspense?
Mm-hmm. Sure,
romantic
of course.
Suspense?
Of course.
So. The, OFC.
Then yes.
It's the, so it is a series that I read the first one, maybe in January, February, where I was reading a ton of books and on a book binge, but not a book buffet, a book binge. Very different. Like, I was just binging a ton of books.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so this particular one, so the first one in this series is called Calculated Risk. Christian romantic suspense triumph over adversity book series.
Okay.
So the one, so I read that one, great one. But what the one I want to focus on is book two. I would say it's helpful to read book one. I don't think that it's, not that they're not standalone, but like they kind of reference characters. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it would be helpful if you read the first one, but I think you could probably read this as a standalone, but I wouldn't know. Okay, so this is the one that I'm reading now called Critical Error. I'm like halfway through it. One decision changed his life. Nathan Hollister nearly died in a war zone, and the experience made one thing crystal clear. Breaking off his engagement was a terrible mistake. He arrives at his ex's ranch to make amends, but gunfire erupts before he can. Someone wants her dead. Cassie Miles is used to being abandoned, first by her mother and then by Nathan. When an attempt is made on her life, she can't protect herself and the horses she's rehabilitating. Accepting Nathan's help is the only answer. A hazardous mission. Nathan won't let anyone harm Cassie. Convincing her to give him a second chance, however, is impossible. As the danger creeps closer, the risk heightens. One critical error could cost Nathan everything again.
Oh, whoa. Man.
Oh, man. Oh, man. So, this book is fabulous. So, this story is, me, Nathan, and I'm like 30, 40, 50% somewhere in that range through the book. I will say, I really like the first one because from the beginning, like, the book grips you. And I'm a big fan of, like, from the beginning, like, I want, for a romantic suspense, I want to be in it as soon as I open the book, and I want to meet the characters very quickly, and I want to immediately know that the book's about these two, you know, because you obviously, if you read the back cover copy, but regardless. And so I like that I've seen about this author, she has done a good job of having like a very empowered female heroine, but then also a male hero. Mm-hmm. And in this particular book, because they were like, she was literally in a wedding dress and he gave someone, I don't know if it was a groomsman or who, a note that said, I can't do this. And then went off to war and hadn't seen her in 4 years.
What?
And he came back because like they lived in a different area when that all happened. She now is living at her grandfather's ranch, or it's like a family ranch, but like her grandfather's there, and she is creating a horse rehabilitation like nonprofit. But it's a lot to create that. So mm-hmm. She works at a animal rescue, like a dog shelter, more traditional house pets shelter as kind of part-time. But she has this stalker who like has been calling her. She changed her number twice and he still calls her. And he'll call her and be like, you were wearing this today. And it's like real creepy because she doesn't know who he is. Yikes. So Nathan moves to the small town that she also lives in now. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go to the ranch and just make amends. And be like, look, I'm not trying to get back together. I'm just saying we're going to see each other. It would be better if I just like say I'm sorry and move on. But literally he comes and like, obviously because they were engaged, he knows her family, and so basically he comes to the ranch, mm-hmm. and he's talking to her grandfather, and because little caveat, like it's kind of like there's a family aspect, so her grandfather takes people in. It's kind of one thing that he does is like, you know, and so one of the families that he took in was this woman named Vessie and her son Eric, and Eric has autism, and so he's 20 years old, but he obviously like, and he helps her with the horses, but he obviously has some kind of I would say like learning disability and that kind of thing. So and this setup is important. So and this all happens like the first two chapters, but anyways, so they're like, Vessie calls Cassie and her grandfather, is like, Eric isn't home yet, but he like always goes the same way home from the ranch because he like helps her out with the horses, and then he like goes home. And she's like, and Cassie's like, oh, don't worry, I'll go out. So she basically goes out, and her stalker has like taken Eric, and so then takes her, and so she's like in the process of being kidnapped, and she had taken a gun with her because it's, you know, literally the Wild West. I mean, it's like a modern book, but like. And so in the stalker, you know, so she was like, all right, so she takes the gun with her, and basically then he like ties her hands down and the gun goes off. And so that's what Nathan is at the ranch with her grandfather being like, where's Cassie? Because he like wants to make amends, and then hears the gunshot. So then he literally, so him and the grandfather literally like go in the grandfather's truck and like drive down. They see Eric kind of like hurt on the side of the road, and he basically points to the river. So then basically, because Nathan's a trained Green Beret, he literally like goes, sees him, tries that's to shoot. Convenient. Yes. And literally like he's trying to figure out how to shoot the guy. And he's obviously like injured in the war because he almost died. And so he's like, you know, I'm going to push through the pain kind of thing. Like, got to get, you know, but they, again, at this point, they have not seen each other in 4 years.
Push through the pain kind of thing. Is that what you just said?
He's been shot?
No, he almost died in war. So he has like scars and he's like, okay. He is like injured. So he's an injured vet.
I thought you said push through the pink eye thing. And I was like, wait,
he has pink eye?
He has pink eye?
How inconvenient. Could you
try to like push through weapon? This and find this for killer? His eyes are oozing.
Listen, here's the thing. I will tell you, hands down, if a man is pursuing a woman and trying to save her from a killer, pink eye or not, you go all in.
Oh, I don't know. My husband just recently had pink eye, and he looked like a scary monster.
Listen.
I told him that, too. His eyes were literally, like, blood red. His eyes are just red. Like, he's just walking around the house, talking to me like a normal person, and he turns to look at you, and you're like, why do you look like that?
Listen, but in that scenario, if your life was in danger,
I told him too.
he would chase down someone with the pink eyes to save your life.
The pink eyes.
He would chase down someone, even with the pink eyes, to save my life.
The pain. So he's like in pain from his war injuries because he literally almost died. He was shot. Okay. The whole thing. Okay. So he's literally like so. There's a lot of rivers around the ranch, and so basically this guy has a boat, so he's trying to take Cassie off, and she's like tied, like her hands are tied behind her back, and she's injured, and basically she decides, because he's like trying to shoot the guy, the like kidnapper,
yeah,
but and he's like obviously a good shot because he's, you know, former military, and he is like, I don't know why I'm literally putting my hands behind him.
Oh, Jess had her hands behind her back for the last like 30 seconds.
So basically, Cassie decides to jump out of the boat into the river.
Hands tied.
Oh, and gosh. So he's like, okay, Jesus, take the wheel. Like,
here we go.
Yeah. And so basically then,
his eye drops.
Pink eye ain't gonna stop me. For the woman that I left at the altar. Think about that. Can you imagine?
Oh, I forgot about that detail.
Can you imagine though? Okay. As the woman... The eye drops. I feel like, here's the thing, that is a commercial for a medication right there. Like, could you imagine, like, it feels like the start of a suspense mystery movie, and then it's literally like, and then it's like, no, all of a sudden no like, pink eye's gonna stop me. Throws it down.
You're in like a car chase. And he like gets out, and his eyes are like so crusty with cook.
But what if he pulls out like two of the eye drops, like
for a holster?
Like almost like he's double guns. Puts the eye drops in. He's like, and then I feel like in this scenario, the voiceover would have to be, even pink eye can't stop love. Bye. Pinky's pink eye cure.
I can't.
Anyways, so they, in this scenario, then the next chapter opens and Cassie's like sitting in her, because she's rescued, sitting in the kitchen at the house with like a bag of peas on her head, and she basically like, and she's like being interviewed by the chief of police, so she's like talking about it and basically trying to like relate her story.
Yeah.
And then she's also like, what is this? Because again, she literally has not seen him in four years, and he pulled her out of a river from a kidnapper. Like, that's, you know, and she's basically like, my God, I mean, he's still so attractive, but what is that? And she's like trying to process all this. And the first thing he says to her is basically, cause she like has this bag of peas or whatever. And he's like, you should probably get a doctor to look at that, is the first thing he says to her. And she's like, excuse me, what? And then she's like defiant and goes and puts the pea bag, like the frozen peas away. And she's like, I don't need any of that. Like, please.
Oh my gosh.
And then basically, she like goes out to the barn cause she's going to take care of the horses. Yeah. She's like, whatever. And she passes out, is that what you said? No.
Yeah. Oh, no.
No. And so then basically Nathan walks out to the porch and the grandfather's like, because he calls him Soldier. He's, because like she told that her whole family, you can't say his name, so they all call him Soldier. She's like, Soldier, He goes, "Did you? Is that how you thought that was going to go?" And he's like, "Not at all." He's like, "Go talk to her in the barn." So then basically he tells her what happened to him in the war. And he's like, "I'm going to protect you. Like, can you, like, please let me protect you. Like, don't think about what, like, the past. Like, this isn't
don't
what this is.
Don't think about how I screwed your life over."
Yeah. Yeah. And part of it, too, is so since caveat here, because it's, a Christian romance suspense, she basically, since he abandoned her on her wedding day, she's like, "God also abandoned me." And so she has not prayed, has not done this. Yeah. So, anyways. So in the meantime, so that's like, she agrees, and then she's like, eye roll, because she's like, "Oh my God." Because there's the forced proximity, there's the whole thing. Okay. So then, one other caveat, and then I didn't finish this whole book, but I'm trying to decide, like, how late I could stay up tonight to finish it. But anyways, I'm calculating. But anyways, so... he, and her go to her job then the next day, because he's, like, protecting her, and she runs into this guy that she's casually seen, because he's basically like, "Look, this guy really knows you as a stalker. The fact that he's, like, disguising his voice on all the phone calls makes me think, and he has ski mask on, makes me think that he's someone that you're seeing." And she's like, and then she, and basically she's like, "Well, like, who have you dated since?" And he's like, "No one." And she's like, "Oh my God, my heart," you know, kind of thing. And then she's like, "I'm casually seeing this vet." And she was like, "I don't know." And then her inner dialogue is, "Why did I say that?" You know, but anyways, long story short, which I haven't read the whole story, but basically they're at a cafe getting lunch to go to her work, and in walks the vet, and, and he, like, knows her order. Like, he's like, "Oh, it's," she's like, "How do you know I'd be here?" And he's like, "Oh, it's Wednesday. You always order a tuna salad sandwich and a coffee before you go into work." Like, super weird.
Okay.
Right? And so instantly Nathan's like, because she, like, has this thought, you know.
Puts his green beret on.
Because, yeah. And throws his eye drops in.
Eye drops, green beret.
Good to go. But, like, so because Nathan sees this, and his whole thing is that after he sees that interaction, he's basically like, "This guy's clearly way more into her than she is into him, so is he stopping her?"
She's saying he's casual, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and he's clearly, like, super into her, and so instantly. And then basically, the part I was at is they get to the animal rescue, like, her job, and there's a bouquet of roses, and her stalker calls her Sugar Plum. He's like, "Sugar Plum, we're going to be together." And you're like, oh my God. And then basically, there's a storm, the power goes out, and she sees the stalker standing outside the window. And so then basically her and him are, like, going through the, like, dark, the dark animal rescue, and then he has to go chase the guy, because he's like, "I need to," you know, and she's also like, "Oh my God, my other coworker is coming in, she doesn't know about any of this, you know, what if a stalker gets her?" So then basically there's this dog, of course, who's, like, raised by a former military guy, and he is, and obviously she's like, "I want Nathan to take this dog, Bruiser," you know, kind of thing.
Sure.
And so she's basically like, "Don't worry, Bruiser will protect me." So Nathan goes outside and tries to chase down the stalker. And, like, the part he literally gets, like, the stalker tries to drive over him with the car. He jumps out of the way.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get the license plate. And then he's like, "Oh, my God."
Mm.
So, anyways.
I should have put more eye drops in.
God.
Well,
my eyes! Curse these oozing eyes!
For the record, his eyes were not oozing, but I feel like...
We made that part up.
I feel like authors who listen to our podcast, first of all, thank you. Second of all, feel free to use the pink eye.
Plotline.
You know?
It could work.
Here's the thing. There is... Can I say this as someone who's not married, and if this is something that will bite me later, I will go on the record and admit that it's wrong.
Okay.
But...
Let's see.
From my experience and what I know... Men being sick of basic things can be debilitating, like colds, etc. And I feel like the idea of a man overcoming pink eye to save the woman he loves just feels like
a very romantic subplot. Right. Because when we'd never see it in real life. You'd be like, "Babe, come rescue me. I'm... A stalker has me kidnapped. I can't. I have pink eye.
I can't get out
of bed. You want me infecting everybody in the city? I'm infecting you guys to stay home. I'm kidding. I'm not being that. I'm being dramatic. But.
Yeah, we're being dramatic for the sake of the audience. But also, honestly, authors, or a cold, you know, just like you're having a terrible cold and you rally, you play through, what is it? You play injured, you play through the pain.
Play through the pain.
Play through the pain. It's a sports metaphor. Oh. Morgan was like, what
the? I wasn't sure what you meant. I was like, uh-huh, sure.
Okay.
We're already over an hour and a half, and all three of us still have another pick.
Listen, so I am loving
zones. Oh, let's do the lightning.
Let's do the
lightning. Well, that works because this is the third pick. I don't think any of us read our third pick.
Oh, I read my full pick thoroughly.
Oh, wait, okay. Sure. Third pick, she read the whole thing.
My
okay,
third pick,
I read the lightning round.
Y'all, listen, I was born for this, so
yes,
don't you worry.
It's true.
She was. She's
okay, so this was a book. I actually don't have a back cover copy for this because I have an ARC, but this book has actually been out since January. This was sent to us by one of our fave publicist friends, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to Elizabeth.
We love you.
You're killing your job.
Yeah, it's true.
Killing it.
Please keep sending us books.
So this is, it was written up in such a way that I'm not going to lie to you, I wasn't completely invested. I was like, okay, well, I might like that. I'll hang on to it. It's a young adult kind of fantasy type of book, which is not real. I mean, I love young adult. I'm not really a fantasy person. This is not my jam. I started this last night. I'm 35% of the way through. I also am going to calculate how long I can keep myself up. The answer is not long. 20 minutes, I'll be in bed, and I'm like, but
it's pregnancy for you.
I know. It's also just me. But
it's after 9 p.m.
Right, exactly. I would really love to stay up all night and finish this book because I am so invested in this. It is so flipping good.
Ooh, tell us.
I love it. Okay, so it's called Once a Queen by Sarah Arthur.
Oh.
Again, this book came out in January. So it's basically a combination of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Secret Garden.
Ooh.
Wow. Those are meshed. So there's a mysterious house. There's a mysterious garden. There is a young girl, a 14-year-old girl, who is kind of finds herself at this estate and is a little bit like,
what's happening?
This is very, well, she's from Connecticut. She's in England. It's like her grandmother's estate. Her grandmother's still there, but they've been kind of estranged because her mom lives a very different life now. Her mom and dad have like, they're just like have nothing to do with this rich, wealthy grandmother that still lives in England, has this huge like whatever. So this girl doesn't even really know her, and she's there visiting. Her mom's with her, but things are strained.
Clearly. Is it her mother's mother?
It's her mother's mother. Yes. And then, but there's also this. There's another world.
Oh.
And you find out that there's a portal to another world that she had read a fantasy book of, that she was like, oh, this is imaginary. And she basically finds out, again,
the girl, I'm like, or the mother?
The girl.
The mother read the girl the books.
Oh.
So the girl, who is the main character, it's from her perspective, she's 14, she is finding out that these stories are real. Well, I mean, that's kind of the thing. This world is real.
In the Secret Garden, or is it somewhere else? In the Enchanted Mansion? What was it?
There's, right. It's a mysterious house. There's like a secret garden. There's like, it's not really a secret garden, but it's like there's magical elements to the garden. There's like these statues. There's all of this stuff. But there's portals to another world that people are constantly like, that you could like fall into this other, like a Narnia type place.
Okay.
However, there is literally a fantasy book series that exists that has been written that she read growing up and loved. And she's finding out slowly and surely, because there's several people on this estate who members of their family have gone to this world and lived complete lives in this other world. Yes. Like, it's crazy. And so then she's like, wait, I thought that this was all made up. It's true. And they're like, yeah, it's true. But her mom doesn't really want to talk about it. But then you find out that her grandmother, and her grandmother definitely doesn't talk about it now, but you do find out her grandmother went to the world and was once a queen. Her grandmother was queen in this other world. So again, I'm only 35% of the way through. So all of this stuff's getting like revealed. So every chapter, it takes place like in Earth, in England.
In
our dimension, I believe so.
Okay.
Um, it feels kind of like timeless just because of the way it's written, but yeah. I think it's supposed to be modern. Like they don't talk about technology really or anything like that much. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like a timeless story. But then at the end of every chapter, there's like a snippet that's from these books.
Oh, cool.
So that kind of reveals a little bit of a layer of like the history there. So I haven't pieced together like who you're just starting to piece together, like, oh, I think this person might be this book character that they're talking about. Oh, this person cool. might be okay. this. Like little bits and pieces of that. And that's kind of getting revealed as we're going along. It's beautifully written.
Super
it's
interesting.
Immediately gripping. Immediately. I probably will also buy a physical copy of this because this is one that I will want the boys to read. And I'll probably want to reread later. It's just so, like, immediately, like, right, you're there. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, chef's kiss. Really, really good. Excellent world building so far. Excellent storytelling. Really highly recommend. Once a Queen, Sarah Arthur.
Done. Love.
That sounds amazing.
Really good.
What would you say would be the age range for that?
Well, the main character's 14.
Okay.
So... it just kind of depends. Again, I haven't finished it. It's Christian fiction YA, so I don't expect there to be anything. It would be more like kind of your mileage may vary based on what you're... like, I probably would have read this at 10 and been fine.
Yeah.
But I had a pretty advanced reading level at 10.
Yeah.
But again, it's Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and Secret Garden vibes. So, like, whenever you read those... you would probably
those as like
be
an 8 or 9 year old.
Yeah, you would probably be
7, 6.
Maybe a little bit. Again, the protagonist is 14, so they're probably saying around like 12 to 16 is probably the suggested age range for that, I would say. But
love. Just depends. Amazing.
Okay, I'll go really quick. Mm-hmm. I didn't read this last pick, but I really wanted to plug this author and because I'm really excited about this book. So the author is Tara Johnson, and the book is To Speak His Name.
See the cover.
Ooh. And it's called The Wings of the Morning series, book one.
Ooh.
So this author has 3 other fiction novels in her backlist. She writes a lot of nonfiction as well. I think she has a ministry and stuff. so she writes a lot of devotional type stuff, I believe. Her books are devotionals. Each one of her fiction novels, literally life-changing. I've read all 3 of them, and
really?
they are so good. They are so well written, and they just make you cry and reevaluate your life and want to be closer to Jesus. And they're amazing. Hence why I'm holding this book right now and showing it to you both, because I pre-ordered it. It just came out March 4th of this year. I pre-ordered it. I had to have it because I literally adore all her other books, and she's such a fabulous writer. So I will read. I know nothing about this book. I have not opened it yet. There's been too many other books I've been reading. But I will read you the back cover, and then you can decide if you want to add this to your TBR, listeners. Avelina is a woman trapped in silence, stolen from her home in Ireland and sold as a slave to a Barbados plantation owner. The trauma of her past has left her mute, wrapped in a prison of loneliness and isolation amid an island of beauty. Though she longs to be free from the cruelty of her overseer, her heart yearns for a greater freedom, something just beyond her grasp. Josiah Holland has been born into a South Carolina slaveholding family, but all it takes is one trip to the island of Barbados to open his eyes to the ugly cruelty that abounds beyond the confines of his plantation. With the aid of fiery abolitionist Benjamin McGee, Josiah forges a new future, fighting the very ideals he was once a part of. When Avelina and Josiah's lives entwine, will their spark engulf them in destruction or ignite a revolution?
Oh, wow.
So that is To Speak His Name by Tara Johnson.
Wow.
I am also calculating how long I can stay up because I'm wanting to start this one.
I love it. Okay, so I went a different direction. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. No one's surprised. I read a book, which honestly, no one's surprised. If y'all had to guess what author I've read so much that I am giggling about, who would this be?
Becky Wade.
It is. Okay. Y'all know me so well. Okay, so the series, so I've read and I've plugged her other series. I'm a really big fan of Becky Wade, obviously. But as are we as podcasters. Mm-hmm. But one of her first series that she wrote is the Porter Family series. And the first one is Undeniably Yours. Okay. Okay, so I need to read the back cover. This was written in 2014, by the way.
Okay.
But honestly, still a great book.
That was only 10 years ago.
Huh?
I said, that was only 10 years ago.
But I mean, like, some books, I will say that, like, if they're, like, contemporary at the time, don't age well.
That's true.
Because if you think about 2014 and what 10 years ago looked like, the world was definitely a different, you know.
Yes.
So, that's okay. True. Let me, sorry, I need to, I don't know why it's not letting me go to you about the, you know, normally if you hit X-ray by accident. I'm literally on my Kindle and I'm trying to find the back cover copy.
Sometimes, every now and then books don't have it.
About the, see in store. Hold on a second.
Lightning do, round,
do,
lightning
do,
round.
Do, do. What is that, Jeopardy music?
Do, do, do.
There we go, okay. Do, do, do. So this was the 2014 Carol Award winner for 2014 Inspirational Reader's Choice Award winner for Long Contemporary. That was a tongue twister, but it's a literally award-winning book.
Okay.
It was published May 1st, 2013. So I'm sorry, it was from 2013. When Meg Cole's father dies unexpectedly, she is forced to return home to Texas and to the Whispering Creek Ranch to take up the reins of his empire. The last thing she has patience or the sanity to deal with. Her father's thoroughbred racing horse farm. She gives its manager, Bo Porter, 6 months to close the place down. Bo knows he ought to resent the woman who's determined to take from him the only job he's ever wanted. But instead of anger, Meg evokes within him a strong, profound desire to protect. The more time he spends with her, the more he longs to overcome every obstacle that separates them and earn her love. Just when Meg realizes she can no longer the depth of her feelings for Bo, their fragile bond is broken by a force from Meg's past. Can their relationship and their belief in God, and their belief that God can work through every circumstance, survive?
Ooh, intrigued. That sounds interesting.
It is delightful. And here's the thing. I want listeners, and you too, to read this book and experience it without me telling, spoiling it for you.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I think it's going to be a great series. Yes. I think the thing. Had I read this in 2013, 2014, I think I would have been a diehard Becky Wade fan since then. Like, it's, here's the thing. It's a different vibe, but, like, there's something that she does so well. And again, I haven't read the rest of the series, but, like, from the beginning, it's like, because Meg, and one of the things I really like is when it's he's not the one who inherited, Meg is, so the female character, she comes there and she's just like, look here, you know, like, this is what's going to happen. And then, of course, like, you know, it's just a lovely, lovely book. And in true Becky Wade fashion, she has such a gift to write these really deep issues that someone is going through. And it's not as deep as some of the other ones that she has kind of gone through, or kind of written in some of her other novels, but it's very well written, and it's introducing kind of the family. I don't know if y'all remember in our last interview, she talked about how the brothers of, what's the series she's writing now? Brothers of...
Sons of Scandal.
Sons of Scandal, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sons of Scandal. Sorry, I was like, Brothers, Sons... was since the Porter family, this is the first time that she's done a brothers series, like, versus, you know, so really well done, and it's like really strong characters. It obviously has the kind of ranch life and that component as well, so I'm a big fan. And as Becky Wade does Swoon, she knows how to do Swoon.
She really does. It's true.
And here's the thing, I feel like she has, in my mind, I know that she's literally the reason, we say this a lot, why we do the Swoon scale, but I also think that she does this in a way that feels so relatable, and it feels like something that you're like, oh, this is what it, like, experiencing love could feel like, versus, like, it feeling like the superficial. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's obviously written in a fiction book, but it feels like this very, like, the real feelings versus, like, oh, we can't go too far, you know, and kind of that tension, I feel like she does really, really well.
Yeah.
In her books that you're like, oh my God, that's very, whoo, that's swoony, but like, woo, okay. You know, like, this isn't going to go too far. Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
And I feel like that is, I feel like the, if you ever dated as a Christian and you're trying to reserve certain things for marriage, I feel like there is that tension that you feel, you know? And so it's, I think that's why her books, and, but like, she's not afraid to write swoony things. And so anyways, you can tell from this that like, oh, she's going to be, and obviously I've read so many of her other, like, more current backlist than this, but really, really big fan, and I would recommend.
Oh, wow. Fun. I can't wait to read that one.
I know. Oh, super fun. So, lots, quite a variety, and so, to be honest,
to add to your TBR.
TBR. I added so many things to my TBR.
Yeah.
And listeners, we hope that you also added things to your TBR, and couple of things. If you have books that you're like, oh my gosh, you ladies would love XYZ, which, side note, we had a lovely listener send in.
Oh my goodness.
We talked about
friend
this.
Friend of the pod, Lauren.
Friend of the pod, Lauren. She sent in a list. We will read a few of the recommendations in the next episode that we record. But if you have books that they're like, oh my gosh, based on kind of some of the things that we were gushing about or laughing about, if you've ever honestly read a book where the male hero had pink eye or some sort of small ailment and overcame it, I'm not talking about a gunshot or like a knife to the head. Like, I'm talking like a
knife to the head.
Like Del Norte?
We're talking about the common cold.
Del Norte situation.
Del Norte. Like, you don't need to be like that level, you know what I'm saying? Where you're almost dying. Yeah.
Lauren has recommended a couple of books now, I think.
Yes.
One each season that we've ended up reading on the podcast and loving. Yeah.
Like, last season she recommended...
She recommended Pudge and the Margins and Pudge and Prejudice.
Yes.
Which were both so good.
So, shout out Lauren. Yes. Thank you so much. And listeners, if you have books or if there's things that you would love for us to include on our next bookshelf episode, or if there's upcoming books that you literally cannot wait to read that we don't know about and you think we would love, DM us, email us. And also, honestly, if you know if it's legal or not, for you to put into a will, whether or not someone can be married to inherit things, we'd love to know.
Solve this problem. I'm pretty sure.
But,
Until next time.
Until next time. I don't think we need to say keep it lit, but why did I want to say that?
We'll say it in a minute.
We'll say it in a minute. Thanks, listeners.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Follow us on Instagram at Redeeming Lit Podcast and be sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify so you don't miss any episodes.
If you have any questions or book recommendations, email us at redeeminglitpodcast@gmail.com.
Until next time,
keep it lit.